Yeah, I'm Bill Smith. I'm an alcoholic. Always say I'm sober through the grace of a loving God and a fellowship and some principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me take my watch off so I'll know when my 2 hours is up. I'd love to thank Carol and the committee for inviting me, and Jeff, you know, awesome host, buddy. Really, really, really made me feel welcome. And to see my good friend Maggie and Frank, Alcoholics Anonymous done that because I came in here a party of one. And, you know, I've done this a lot. I've always had mixed emotions about doing this. It's like maybe I know something or something. I'm sober, if I can stay sober a couple more weeks, so I have 37 years. And, well, that's the only reason I'm talking. I would have been dead a long time ago as you hear my story. And, you know, I know a lot of people say alcohol doesn't have anything to do with alcoholism. I can't drink. There's a lot of things I can do, but I can't drink safely, you know. I haven't been in jail, haven't been even been in a fight since I quit drinking. You know what I mean? My brothers talked to me. I wasn't allowed on none of them's property, you know. And I was raised in North Carolina. I was raised way out. We didn't even have electric lights when I was a kid. And my father was superintendent of Brown Williams Tobacco Company, and he later on started his own business, became successful. I got 3 brothers. Don't even get parking tickets, you know what I mean? One of them still got the same wife he started with. Can you imagine that? How ridiculous is that? You know, I got drunk and married the same one twice, you know. So I felt a little out of place, you know, and the closest house to us, we didn't have electric lights when I was real young because my father figured the kids would be better off raised on a farm, and not because he couldn't afford it, the power lines didn't come out that far. Later on they did, and you know, my brothers excelled at everything they did. I failed the third grade, you know. They said, you know, why don't you do this? And I'm thinking, why don't you do that, you know, and I never paid attention. I still have trouble with that. You know, I got a mind that thinks a lot about Billy. And I did, you know, I just went through school because I had to. It's a law in North Carolina. You have to go. And when I got, and I don't know what grade I went to. I didn't finish many of the courses, so I don't know what I have. But I never graduated. And I had a few drinks. I found out if I drank that white whiskey, I could talk to girls, you know what I mean? And it seemed like I functioned better, but I didn't go out and say, give me some more of that or none of that. That didn't happen. And I was always sort of the kid that was always getting in trouble. I mean, the rules counted for other people. They just didn't seem to do much for me, you know? If you said don't do this, I couldn't wait to try to do it, you know, and I don't know why I was like that, but I was, and I don't know what I was thinking, but it was in 1953, and I turned 18 years old end of July, and the 1st of August, I was a member of the U.S. Navy, and they sent my butt to San Diego, California to train and be on a ship and do boot camp, and never been around people in my life, you know what I mean, and just lived in one little area, and the closest house to us was a mile away, and I'm thrown into this big city, and this is sort of what they said. They probably didn't say it like this, but yeah, they did. The Korean War was still going on a little bit, and it was still a war zone, and they said if you're old enough to die, and some of you guys have been in service, you know what I'm talking about, you're old enough to drink. I couldn't go downtown because you had to be 21, but I could go to the PX and get whiskey and drink like a big person. You know what I mean? And right away, my choice of alcohol was more, you know. And I didn't know that, you know. And the truth of it is I joined the Navy to see the world and became a drunk. And I didn't plan it that way. I had all kinds of things planned, but that wasn't part of it. And, you know, I always considered myself being really dumb. And they had a thing in the Navy called the Communication Technician School, and it was a school where they broke codes of other countries. And I thought that might be fun. I'd like to do that. And so I was going to put in for it. So I told the chief, I want to put in for that school. He says, you can't put in for it. I says, why not? He says, he just told me, you're too dumb. You got no education and stuff. That's for guys that's really got it going on and stuff. And I thought, dang. And I've always been really fast. When I was in high school, I went out for football. We ran 100 yards. I beat everybody. I lasted about 3 or 4 days. Went out for basketball. The guy said I'd be a good guard, and I knew I wasn't going to be All-American by the end of the week, so I quit that. Anyway, we used to break, and we'd be, I think it was like 60 of us in this boot camp, and we'd break and run for the barracks. And almost every time I'd beat everybody back. And this one time I got back and I went to just open doors like that. And I went to open the doors. I'm leading the pack and somebody decided to come through the other side. And I hit that door head on like this right with my face. And I wound up in a hospital. And I don't remember how many days I was in the hospital, but I was going through these books and I seen this book on CT school. So I got this stupid book out and I started reading it, right? And studying this thing. And I found out from an officer in there that the chief couldn't stop me from taking that test. And so I went and told him, I'm taking the test. And it was only one guy beat me on a score. You know, I found out later on, but I always felt so dumb, you know. And I did that like I did everything else in my life. The school was 12 months, it was a year school, and I lasted 11 months. And they flunked me out because I show up drunk and they didn't like that. And they didn't think they needed a drunk breaking other people's code, I guess. And I wound up being a radio operator and they put me on a heavy cruiser. And we had the Admiral of the 7th Fleet on. It was a heavy cruiser. It was almost 1,000 guys on the ship. And we went to Japan. And you can do a lot of things in the Navy. You just can't miss the boat. Well, I was in Japan, one of them houses where they had all that stuff I liked. Must have had too much of all of it, I guess. And when I got back, the boat was gone, you know. For you guys who have been in service, you know what I'm talking about. They could put my stripes on a hinge. They just went on and off, you know. I went in a little white stripes. I made second class petty officer, and I came out with little white stripes, you know. God, you know, I don't know how many times I was in trouble, you know, but when you're in it, I don't know how it is now, but when you was in the Navy then, when you get arrested, the shore patrol would come and get you and say, he belongs to us, you know, and you go back and you captain's mast and get restricted and all that kind of crap, you know. But I was a radio operator and, at night, and, we had the music for the whole ship. So. The cooks and the medics became my best friends because I'd get stuff from the cooks and I could get alcohol from the medics. And so they became my best friends and I made sure they got there. Whatever I knew, whoever was on shift, I could just put the music on that they liked, you know. I was going to make a career out of the Navy until I got busted again. And I thought, no, if this ain't for me, you know, I'll stay here 30 years and come out with white stripes. That don't make sense, you know. And so I went to Florida where my folks live. My father always promised my mom that he would buy her a big home in Florida, and he did do that. I never seen my mother and father smoke a cigarette. I never seen my mother and father take a drink. I never heard my mother and father cuss. They went to church a lot, and they tried to practice that stuff in every day. Never heard the N-word in my home. I got all that stuff in my homies. I didn't get none of that at home. If you didn't say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, and open the door for somebody, you felt something on the back of your pants. I was raised right. I just turned left, you know. And my folks practiced that till the day they died. And now I'm 77 years old trying to put in my life what my mom and dad tried to teach me when I was 9 and 10. Ain't that a... You know, God, and I got out of the Navy and I went down and I did what the book said. I straightened out for 4 or 5 months. I controlled it pretty good and I got a good job at General Electric and I wound up, I sort of quit it, getting ready to fire me anyway, and went to work on a commercial fishing boat and got fired from that. They want you to show up every time the boat leaves and, I got the job pumping gas for $1 an hour and got fired from that. You know, and I just felt like, you know, I remember when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, my sponsor told me that people come in Alcoholics Anonymous, low self-esteem, you don't have any at all. I felt like I run the race of life, you know what I mean, and lost. And it just really, I'm going to tell you a quick story about these brothers of mine. I got to get on a plane because the one that's next to the youngest is, he's on his way out. And his wife called me and said, if you want to see him, you better get back here. He's been sick for a long time. And so I'm able to show up today because of a thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't want to be a wish I had of. I'm a doer. If something has to be done, I do it today. I don't have all my life. I say, I wish I'd done this. I wish I went and seen him. I just go see him now. You know, I get off my butt and go. I'm tired of that. And as I tell you this story, but, I got a piece of paper in the state of Florida. It says, if I'm caught driving in the state of Florida, I automatically start pulling time. I don't even have to go to court. You know, hit three parked cars one morning trying to get home. I was too drunk to walk, so I had to drive and so I had this piece of paper, and I was a president of a bowling league. I was a pretty, really good bowler one time in my early 20s. And I was president of this league, and I just got this piece of paper. And I told my dad, I said, I got all this money, and I'm president of that league. And I don't want to give it to somebody because they run on with it. I'm responsible for it. So my father says, why don't you just go ahead and drive? You're a good driver, sober. Don't drink and come back. I said, great idea. So we had it at the Lions Club, and I went over and we had this big party and everything, and some guy come over and said, we really appreciate you bringing the business out. Why don't you have a drink? I said, no, thank you. And another guy come over and said, we really appreciate you bringing the business out. Why don't you have a drink? And I said, no, thank you. And the president of the Lions Club come over and said, why don't you have a drink with us? We really appreciate it. I said, okay, I'll have one. And about a few hours later, I'm leaving, and first light I come to, I didn't see it. I didn't know what it was. I didn't realize it. I didn't realize it was red, but I ran it, and here the cop pulls over, and so when he pulls over, I'm locking the car up, and he says, what are you doing? I just hand him the piece of paper. I said, here, read this. You know, and he was almost ready to let me go. He was. I could tell. I said, I'm going to beat this thing, you know. Because I told him what I did. We come to the Lions Club. You know, we brought the business out there. And there's another car pulled in behind me. And he says, you've had it. You're done now. That's the lieutenant. And they took me down to this. I told for years it was Madeira Beach. But I found out later on from my brother it was Treasure Island. I had the wrong city. Well, now you drink. This guy that pulled me over kept telling the lieutenant, he said, we're going to ruin this kid's life. This kid is not a bad kid. This kid's a drunk, you know. And they finally come over to me. And I remember the lieutenant saying, well, he hasn't told me the truth one time. Every time I've asked him a question, he's lied to me. He ain't told me the truth one time, you know. If I tell the truth, it's an accident. I didn't mean to do it, you know. And finally, he says, if you got somebody that can come and get you. And I said, yeah, I do. So I called my brothers. I called Sam and David, I said, get out here, Sam and Joe, and I said, get out here quick as you can. Cause if you don't, they're gonna lock me up and I gotta pull some time. And so they came out. We drove like a block and a half, two blocks from the police station. And I said, pull over and get out of the car. And I said, if you don't, I'll whip both of you right here. And I left them standing in a strange city and drove off. And, I can tell you the next time they came, I called, they didn't come, you know, and what I did was I separated myself from my brothers. Everybody that I run into, I was no longer allowed on my brother's property. They wouldn't have anything to do with me, none of them. And if you're an alcoholic of my type, I'm not a bad person. I'm just an arrogant butthole. You know what I'm saying? And after I lost that job and I lost the fishing job and all that, a guy kept telling me, he said, why don't you go to Las Vegas? They got 24-hour bars, a lot of showgirls, and cocktail waitresses look like they come out of a mold. I said, yeah, that sounds like Billy. So 1963, I come across that hill, less than $200 on me, and an old car that you could hear 3 miles before you seen it. And, went into the Fremont to have a couple of drinks to figure out what I was going to do with my life. And I must have played 22. I know I couldn't have played 21 because I woke up broke. Had one phone number of this guy that told me to come out. I had this phone number for his brother, and I called him, told him I was in town, and he let me sleep on his couch for a couple of months, but I'd get drunk, and he had two little girls, and he didn't like my dirty little mouth around his little girls, and he asked me to leave, and I wound up homeless in Las Vegas, walking down Fremont Street with everything I owned in a carnation box, and I'd scrape up enough money to get into one of those flea bags. We had flop houses where you could sleep for a dollar, and I got a job as a shill, and that's guys that start games, and when the games get going, you move to another game, a dead game, and get it started. And I got fired from that. Nobody wanted that job, and I got fired, you know, and I'm sitting over there, and Ray Schreiber come over, the boss, he come over and said to me, he says, go home and sober up and get back. And he told me the next day, he said, what are you going to do with your life? And I said, I don't have a clue. You know, I'm like 28 years old. And he said, what are you going to do with your life? I said, I don't have a clue. He says, let me break you in the gambling business. For some reason, he liked me. He seen something he liked, and I don't know what it was. And anyway, he started breaking me in the gambling business, and they had a cocktail waitress in there that from Germany, and she had some things I really liked. Wait a minute. Hold on. See how you are? You're thinking like this. She also had a car and an apartment, you know, and she liked old Billy. And I got drunk and got married, and I got a good job at Sahara, and started having physical problems. I got where I couldn't hardly keep a soft boiled egg down, and I got where I was like 29 or 30 years old, and my health was just gone. And there was a guy that worked at the hotel said that there was a doctor in Santa Barbara, California that had good luck with people like you, like I was some kind of different, which I knew I was, you know what I'm saying? And so I checked into the hospital. I'm going to tell you how many days I was in there. I was in there quite a while. I'm not going to say this is what the doctor said, but I'm going to tell you this is what I remember him saying. What he told me was I was going to be lucky if I lived two more years. And what happened was I'd ruined the lining on my stomach because of alcohol. I'm the kind of guy, once I start drinking, I don't eat. Because if I eat, I get sick. And so I drink, and I wake up, I pass out, I throw up, and I try to get enough down just to chill out, and then I'm drunk again, you know. And I don't mean to be like that, but that's the way I am. You know, and more about alcoholism, it talks about we're like men who've lost their legs. They never grow new ones. And I still do, take guys through the book individually. And every time I'd read that, I'd go, how stupid does Bill think we are? God, he must think we are a literal crowd, you know? Everybody knows if you cut your leg off, you ain't going to grow another one, you know? God, you know? Why would he put something that stupid in there, you know? And finally one day, I'm taking this kid through the book, and he says, and I'm telling him, you know, like men who lost their legs. And the kid goes, yeah, once you're alcoholic, you can't go back and be non-alcoholic. I said, oh, yeah, that's right. That's what he's saying. I'm going, oh, yeah. Right. Good thing I'm taking him through the book, you know. Boy, you can learn a lot from newcomers if you just listen. That's what it was. Once you become alcoholic. And I really, really want to welcome the new people. If you're new here, I hope you listen to my story, because my first meeting ever was a conference. And that's the reason I still do this. I hate traveling. I don't despise it. I absolutely hate traveling. Going to the airports and stuff. Plus I got pacemaker and I'm diabetic and all kinds of things going on in me. And I'm 77 years old. And I know these guys that speak every week. That ain't me. You know, and God bless them, you know, and so, I came out of that hospital, and I came home, and I told Inga, I says, if you take a drink, I'm leaving. And I know why I told her that today, because if she did, I would. Now, here's the thing. I did what any good man would do. I walked in the house, and I quit drinking. I went and joined the gym. I got inspirational books, all that stuff in chapter 3. You know what he talks about? Switching scotch or brandy, drinking physical exercise, going to psychiatrists. I did all that crap, you know. And some people say I didn't have a drink for 6, some say 8, so I say 7. I'm not sure. But during this period of time, I was employee of the month at the Sahara Hotel. And we had a beautiful daughter. And hey, people say, you know, you went 7 years without meetings or anything. I said, I didn't know nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous. Never heard of it. You know what I mean? And then I thought I was unique, but they wrote a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. And here's my belief. If you're really alcoholic that the book talks about, you're in that book. Right? So I'm reading the stories one day in the front where it's got Jim, the car salesman. The second story, right? But the guy who was shaking in the morning, seen it was causing him trouble, so he decided to quit. And he didn't have a drink. Said not only was he successful, he was happy for 25 years. And put on his slippers, he was 55 years old, and less than 2 months he's in the hospital, and less than 4 years he was dead. A robust man. Anything that money could buy, he could do. Once an alcoholic, and I've heard people say, well, he left right where he left off. I don't think so. I think it progressed, and he was just shaken, and less than 2 months he was in the hospital. I believe today if I take a drink, I'm a dead man. I believe this is a one-shot deal for Billy Smith. That's the reason after all these years, I might have time to get to it and tell you all the things I do today, because I'm an active member of a thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't tell me you love Alcoholics Anonymous. Show up and do it. You know what I mean? I hear people say, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I say, well, why don't you show up? You know? Why don't you come and show us how much you love it? You know? When you see a homeless person, let me see you reach your hand in your pocket and then see your hand come out. You know what I'm saying? If you're doing so good, you know, let me see you share what you got, you know. And coming out of the hospital and went out to play golf one morning. I'm playing with some guys that everybody would know if I mentioned them, and I'm not going to mention them. And one of them offered me a beer, and I took it. Menu. And 30 seconds before that, I'm not even thinking about drinking. And me and you both know that one beer can't hurt you. Everybody knows that. Only if you're an alcoholic. You know what I thought? I thought I was a drunk. Drunks don't have to go to meetings. And I had a couple beers at the golf course, and I went home and told this pretty lady, had a couple beers at the golf course, and she started crying and screaming. Oh my God, don't you remember what the doctor told you? What are you nuts, Billy? We got a daughter to raise. What the heck are you doing? How can you be that insane? I said, Inga, I don't even want nothing. And I'm thinking I should have got a second opinion, because I don't think this guy really knew what he was talking about. You know what I'm saying? But I didn't realize it's not if I drink again, it's just when. In less than 2 weeks, I was a falling down drunk, and I drank for like 14 months and became a drunk all over and a nasty, and I'd go look in the mirror and I'd tell myself, this is not what your mother raised. I thought I'd become a bad person. That really, really bothered me. You know, I didn't understand. I just had alcoholism. And when I start drinking, my values go right into the toilet. I do things and hang out with people that I would never hang out with sober. And for the first time, I got real depressive. And then I started on a daily basis right before I came to you people, trying to commit suicide. And I'm not that type. Believe me when I tell you, I'll shoot you. But I got up and I just couldn't take it. And every day I'd go out in the front yard. And the truth of it was, I didn't want my daughter to see me when my brain's knocked out. And I didn't want to mess up the house. How about that? You know, but I just couldn't do it anymore. And this loving God must have said, I think he's ready. So this pretty lady that I was married to in 1975, told me she was taking me to a dance. And what she done was, she sort of shut the bedroom door on old Billy. Got Billy's attention. So I'm thinking, right? Go to this dance, take a shower, dance with this old broad a couple of times. Don't laugh. I like the A right from the start. I don't think it makes any difference how God gets you in Alcoholics Anonymous. I really don't. You know, I got a friend of mine. He was sitting in court, Sanford, and the judge says, I'm going to give you 3 years or you can go to AA. And he punched his lawyer, said, tell him we're taking A&A. You know, he didn't have a clue what it was, right? And he never had another drink, made a bed, or did any dope after his first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he died sober, and he helped a ton of people, right? So the court said, you know, here we go. And so I went to that meeting, and I got real lucky. This loving father of mine, had a guy there that I knew. He was a crap dealer like me, one of the worst drunks I've ever seen in my life. Tommy M. And a nasty little Irishman and I tell everybody, you know, he's just a big troublemaker. His fight record, I tell everybody, is like 0-93, but it didn't stop him. You know what I mean? It's just a jerk. And you know, when I seen him, he ran, got some coffee and brought me, and I didn't like Tommy. And Inga knew that. You know, and I told Tommy, I told Inga, I said, if he messes with me, I'm gonna break his nose. She said, Jesus Christ, Billy, he brought you some coffee. And he says, Billy, you need to be here. You know, this thing will work for you. Isn't that weird? All your friends and everybody around me knew I had a problem long before I did. Isn't that something? I used to think he was the worst drunk I've ever seen in my life, and I'm with him every night drinking, right? And I can see Tommy shouldn't drink so much, you know what I mean? He should take a day off every now and then, you know. But we hung out at this place called the Plush Horse, you know, and God, they killed a guy one night, and we could have cared less. You know what I'm saying? It's like, give me another drink, you know. I don't guess he'll be drinking no more, you know. And God, just nuts, you know. And that was over 36 years ago, and I can still tell you who the speakers was. It was Johnny Harris and Father Hillary and Tom O'Sullivan. A lot of them are dead now, and I can tell you what they said. Isn't that weird or what? You know, and at the end of the conference, I don't know how they do it here, but they give a big book to the newcomer. And every guy that kept punching me and saying, you're going to get the book. You're going to get the book. I said, they ain't giving me no book. I can tell you that. And I didn't take it. And 15 years later, I'm sitting at that same conference. And there's a guy there. And his wife says, they're going to give you the book. He says, I ain't taking the book. I said, well, you really don't have to. Be nice if you got up there, but I said, I wouldn't get up there either. And he started laughing, you know. And I went all weekend, and I came home a couple nights later, and here's what I hope happens to one of the newcomers. I walked in the house, and I told Inga, as soon as you fix supper, I'm going to an AA meeting. And then this is what has to happen. For me to change, it has to become my idea. You can talk all you want to, but it has to become my idea. What I didn't want to be prejudiced no more, and I never went around, you know, because I wasn't raised with black people. I was raised, but they lived in one section, we lived in another. And I said, I won't be like this no more. And, you know, and that was over 15 years ago. Now I sponsor half the hood, you know. And well, God started sending, you know. First guy called me up, and he says, I tell him when I go to the Skid Row detox, I say, call before you leave. And if you go back to your homies, you got no shot. If you call, you got a shot. And this guy said, you just call before you leave, so I'm calling. And I said, okay, what's your name? He said, Jerome Jackson. And he says, I can use his full name, so I do. And I said, well, what do you look like? He says, well, I'm black. I said, well, Jerome, I can tell that on the phone, for Christ's sake. I said, I live about 20 minutes from the detox, just be out front. And his little pencil mustache, you know, and he gets in my truck, and he was from Chicago. And was 44 years old, and I said, what do you do for a living? He says, I've never worked. I said, well, you had to do something. He said, Billy, I've never had a W-2 form in my life. I said, you got to be kidding. I said, what do you do? He said, I'm from the hood. I said, Jerome, listen to me real close. The only hood I know anything about is the one on my truck. I don't know nothing about no hood. He said, girls and drugs. I said, okay, how many times you been in prison? He says, 3 times. I said, okay. I said, good. We'll start with day labor. He said, I don't do day labor. I said, well, get out of the truck. I said, this is not negotiable, brother. You gotta, you know, you're gonna have to be self-supporting. And he said, ma'am, what are you about? I said, well, maybe with God's loving help, we can fill up this hole you got in your gut. And you can fill up this hole I got in my gut. He said, what are you talking about? I said, stay sober long enough and I'll explain it to you. And he says, okay, I'm going to do what you say because I don't want to do that no more. I said, that's great. I said, when's the last time you listened to shit-kicking music? He says, I never have. I said, today's your first day. Listen to this. True story. It wasn't even 3 weeks because he didn't have a car and no driver's license. We're going down and Kenny Rogers had a song out called I Am the Greatest. This is about a little kid playing baseball. And the song was on again. He's over there going like this. I'm going, wait a minute, Jerome. He said, no, that's a good song. I said, that's right. That is. You know what I'm saying? And when they knew, I don't do anything to scare them off. I let them just sort of get away with stuff until I get my hook in them. You know? I don't. I just, you know, go along with him and everything. And when he called me up, he'd always say, and he tells us a lot better than I do, he always say, instead of saying goodbye, he'd go, look out. I said, okay. What the heck does that mean? You know, and you call me up and go, look out. Jesus Christ. And so I let him go on for a few months, and finally one day he says, look out, old dude. I said, wait a minute, Jerome, why can't you say goodbye like everybody else? What's this look out stuff? He says, you know, old dude, look out for yourself and look out for God's kids. And I said, oh my goodness, look out. So when he calls me now, I go, look out, brother. You know. He got a job at cleaning the bathrooms, the toilets, and called me up one day, and he's complaining about cleaning bathrooms and stuff, and I said, you want me to come down and give you a hug? And he's a big guy, and he said, if I could have got my hands on him, I'd have had a different sponsor, because I'd have got rid of him. And I told him, you be the best bathroom cleaner they got, because they need people like you. And they started promoting him, and 15 years later, I'm not going to tell you what hotel he's in, but he runs a shift. He's the man in charge because he became a good employee. And when you get good employees, you do the right thing. You take them right on up the ladder. And they took him right up the ladder. And today he has, I don't know how many people working for him, you know. And I didn't do that. God did, but I was a part of that. And it's impossible to help somebody and feel bad. It's just impossible to do that. And I started going to meetings. I went from suicide to homicide in about a week. I didn't want to hurt me. I want to kill every sucker I've seen. You know, I had a kid told me one time, you need to wait your steps. And I said, well, come outside and I'll knock you off of these, you little jerk. And I got locked in a pissed off position, you know. I didn't get a sponsor. I just got a good meeting habit. I hear people come in, and God bless you. They come in and say they really feel a part of Alcoholics Anonymous and all that. Great. I'm glad that happened for you. That didn't happen for me. I sat in the back like this, locked in that pissed off position. But this is what I felt. If you're new here, this is what it is. For this 1 hour and a half or 1 hour or whatever you're here, you're safe. I felt safe. Nothing was going to happen to me. I found out real quick, no matter who you are, what you are, what color you are, who you are, where you come from, nobody can throw you out of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the only place in the world that I know that they can't ask. If you sit there until you're seen, keep your mouth shut, there ain't a soul in the world can ask you to come up and leave. There can be a guy sitting right beside you with 40 years and you got 2 days, you got just as much right to be there as he does. That's what makes alcoholics so neat. Isn't it weird? I was at a retreat one time and I was talking to Father John Lynch, and he's in the big meeting in the sky, and he was telling me that you was raised in the South. When you get up in the morning, you're wrong. And I said, that's right. You know, and everything's a sin. And he said, what if I told you God put you here to love you so you could love another human being? I said, I like that. He said, well, isn't that what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous? We take people in Alcoholics Anonymous that, like me, that their family don't want anything to do with. Nobody does. And they come up and grab you by the hand, and they go, George Hargraves and Catfish John goes, we're really glad you're here, buddy. And you know the weird thing about that is they're really glad you're here. And they do everything they can to get you come back to one more meeting, to get this hook in you so you stay here. You know what I'm saying? I remember one time we left the old Alana Club. I was brand new, and they said, come on, we're going over to Jerry's Nugget and get some pie and ice cream. And I said, I got to go home. I got things I got to do. And Catfish reached over and grabbed me like this, and he says, Billy, we know you ain't got no money. We didn't ask that. Come on, let's get some pie and ice cream. And I said, how in the hell they know that? You know. You know what I mean? Walk around bumming cigarettes, that's the first good sign, you know. You know what I'm saying? And there was people like that. And it's the people, you know, we was talking earlier at Leonard, and there was a guy, Bill Birch, and he always said, there is a loving God, but Alcoholics Anonymous will not work without the people. You know, you can go sit in a closet and ask God to bring you a cheeseburger, it ain't going to happen. But you can ask one of us and we'll go get it for you. You know, I will, you know. And people in Alcoholics Anonymous, if you walked into the room and none of us were there, there's nobody to identify. And I remember I was at a meeting and this guy was going on about being self-centered and all this. And I'm squirming in my chair, I guess, as usual. And when the guy got done, after the meeting, Catfish says, you know what my problem is? And I said, yeah, I know you're self-centered and yes, and then. He said, that's true. He said, Billy, but these people, it's a self-centered, never had a drink in their life. He said, here's my problem. I continued to drink while drunk. I said, holy mackerel, that's what's wrong with me. Everybody said, let's go get drunk. And then they said, let's go get Chinese food. And I continued to drink. And I pass out and I wake up and they go, you want a drink? I said, oh, yeah. You know, I said, that's right. And it was things like that. I'm digging a ditch one time. They're starting a new club and I had a newcomer's job. You know what I mean? Digging a ditch. The old timers up there, and it's like June, July in Las Vegas. Right? They on an umbrella drinking iced tea. Make sure the ditch is straight, I guess. I don't know what they're doing. They're not swinging the pick. I know that. So I looked at Carl and I said, Carl, tell me a cold beer wouldn't taste good like that. He said, I'd never just tell you that. Sure. He said, but let me ask you a question. What does this 17th one taste like? He said, they lose their taste after 10 or 12. And I said, I'm not talking about 17 beers. I'm just talking about a cold beer. He said, Billy, when did you ever have one cold beer? You know what I mean? Back to digging the ditch. That's right. They lose their taste. And what Silkworth says is people like me, once I take a drink, I'm not drinking to escape or nothing. I'm only drinking because I took a drink. And that only happens in the people who have alcoholism. You know, I'm one of those people who believe that it's a threefold disease. Everybody doesn't believe that way, but I do. I believe I got a mind that will not let me not pick up a drink. And once I do, I got a body that won't control it. My body is different than my brother's. You put alcohol into me, my body demands you put more in it. And then I got a spiritual sickness that sooner or later will drive me back to pick up the drink to start the vicious cycle always over. Book says twice, anytime Bill's got anything important to say in the book, he always says it two or three times. And he talks about find a spiritual way of life or going to the bitter end. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or find some spiritual principles. No door three. Find her, find him, get it, get at, get a job. Spiritual way of life, death. No other thing. And I talk about that a lot. And a couple of years ago, two or three years ago at Christmas time, I was on the main street and I pulled up to a stoplight and there's a guy coming down through the, walking through the cars and he's walking like this and shaking. And I seen him and I said, ain't nobody going to give him that guy no money. So I took a couple of dollars out of my pocket and I blew my horn. I said, come here. And I handed him the couple bucks and I said, here, go get yourself a drink. And he said something I absolutely forgot all about. He says, I can't right now because I'm too sick. But he says, later on, I'll be able to do it. And as I started to roll the window up, he goes, Jeff, he goes, remember now, there's no door three. I said, only Michael, he's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, and the guy said, why would you give a guy a couple dollars knowing he's going to go get a drink? I said, you're not me. You must not be an alcoholic of my type. It might save his life. It might stop him from going into DTs. It might absolutely save his life. You know, and I know what they're going to do with it, you know. And I remember when I was walking the streets, if you offered me a steak sandwich or a bottle of beer, I'd have took the bottle of beer. You could get, even though I was hungry, I would take the drink, everything over there. And it's not my job to start talking AA to him. My job is to help him and keep my mouth shut. I did a Southern California conference, I don't know how many years ago, quite a few years ago. And I was talking about things like that. And when I got done, when I get home, I took cards and stuff that people put in my pocket. And I took this piece of paper out, and it's called The Game. And here's the game, and I love this. If you help somebody and you don't tell nobody and they don't find out about it, you get 2 points. If you help somebody and they do find out about it, but you don't tell anybody, you get 1 point. If you help somebody and you tell somebody and they do find out about it, you get no points. If you never tell anybody how many points you got, you lose the game. The game is between me and God. And I still think the greatest compliment I've ever had in my life, I was going up to Frank's been there. I go to a halfway house about twice a week where they house 43 guys. And I'm walking up the thing, and all the guy said was, here come the guy with a lot of points. And I thought, wow, that makes me really feel really good. Because I keep them cigarettes in my truck. I go down to the Indian store to get the cheapest ones I can get. And I don't try to preach AA at them. You know, I just try to be their friend. And I always tell them, if you ever need some help, I'm the guy you want to call. You know, and I give them my card. And every now and then, one of them will call. You know, and few years ago, a guy that I sponsored, and I got this sponsor, Ted Davis, and I was coming out of the club one day, and I knew I wasn't going to get home. And once again, this loving father of mine had the right person. I turn around, and there's this old guy called Ted Davis. He's in the big meeting in the sky. He died a little over a month ago. And I asked him, will you please be my sponsor? And before he could say anything, because I hate rejection, still do, I said, I'll do anything you tell me. And that's the wrong thing to tell Ted Davis. He said, okay, be over at my house this afternoon at 1:30. And I said, well, I didn't mean today, you know, and God, you know. But you know what I did? I showed up. You know what I did? I showed up. And I remember one time I told him, he says, I said, I need to do the four step. He says, he don't have a car. Pick him up and take him to a meeting and go all day and not try to hurt yourself or somebody else. He said, we'll get to the first four step, but you right now, you just try to help other people. And he told me, he says, I want you to go on the 12-step list. And I said, what's that? He said, well, you give your number to central office and they'll call you and you go pick up drunks. I said, well, Ted, listen, I'm not a real alcoholic, not what the book talks about. He says, tell them that, they'll like that. I said, Ted, I am so angry. I want to tear everybody's face off. I say, he says, tell them that. He says, here's what I want you to do. Pick them up, bring them, turn them over to us. Just go pick them up and bring them down to the club. And he said, Billy, here's what I want you to do. I just want you to be the best Billy Smith you can be. Don't try to be nothing else. And they'll see right through you. And that's what I'm trying to do today. I try to do the best I can do. And I wound up doing a four step with him and going through the fifth step with him. It was just halfway through this thing. And I said, I can't believe I'm telling you this stuff. And he said, don't you understand why? I said, yeah, because if I don't, I'm going to drink. He said, Billy, that's not the reason. The reason you're telling me is because you trust me. And I thought, that's right, I do. And this guy sent me a card, a Christmas card, few years ago, not too long ago. And on this card, he had a thing about it, and I don't know if you've ever heard this or not. It's about the man in the hole. And in my case, from 15 to 40, I've been in the hole for 25 years. And as a doctor walks by, and I yell up at the doctor and I said, listen, I've been in this hole for 25 years. Can you please help me? And he writes some prescriptions down on a piece of paper and drops them down in the hole and leaves. And pretty soon there's a priest comes by and I call up to the priest and I said, listen, I've been in this hole for 25 years. Could you please help me? And the priest writes some prayers on a piece of paper and drops them down into the hole and leaves. Pretty soon my sponsor comes skipping along and I call up to my sponsor and I said, listen, I've been in this hole for 25 years. Can you please help me? And my stupid sponsor jumps down in the hole. And I tell my sponsor, you're the dumbest guy I've ever met. Now we both stuck in this hole. And my sponsor says, no, we're not. I've been in this hole before and I know the way out. And that's all it is. It's about me not telling you what to do. I got guys that go to prison and stuff, David and all them guys, Jerome. I've never told one of them ever go down to detox. I've never told them to go to prison. They just see what I do and they go do the same thing. Not once did I ever say, why don't you get on the prison list or why don't you do this? And Thomas and Jerome, every Sunday for years would fill that truck up with food and go down and feed the homeless. And not once did I ever tell them to do that. But I know both them guys have got a lot of points. And I just started and I tried to make amends to my brothers, and I called my brothers, and they said, Mom says you're doing good, click. You know, and I told my sponsor, my brothers are a-holes, and he said, go look in the mirror. Thanks a lot, Ted. But I'm a pit boss, Caesar's Palace retired. Pretty sharp dude, I found out. I ran everything. So I started sending my nieces cards. And Uncle Bill put $50 bills in my niece's cards. And pretty soon my nieces started talking about their Uncle Bill around my brothers. And they go, we don't care what you think. We think he's the best uncle there ever was. You know. I'm graduating from the seventh grade. I got you, honey. Here it comes, baby. I'm going to Sunday school. I got you, baby. Here it comes. You know. I called my brothers one time. I said, I'm going to be in town for 10, 11 days. I'd like to have lunch. And they all agreed to meet me. And it wasn't a really awakening thing, but it broke the ice. And when I was 10 years sober, Bobby came to me and told me, never told you how proud we were of you. And I said, it took you 10 years to tell me that. He said, Billy, you drink. That's what you do. And I said, well, maybe with God's help. And this is the same one I'm getting ready to go back to see. And for my 30th birthday, he was in Las Vegas for my 30th birthday, him and his wife. And I got a picture of them smiling right in the middle of all these AAs. And alcoholic, everything that's decent and good in my life is a direct result of a thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. This 43-year-old daughter that I have that I told you about, I was a lousy father. Last Monday, she had 4 months. And I want to tell you about the 12-step call that was made on her, because it's really important to me. Because every now and then we get into these people that's rigid. You got to do it like this and like this and like this. And I don't think God's like that. I think he just might show up anywhere. And there's a pretty black lady from Alabama that I've known for a long time, and she's in town, and she called me, says, how's Debbie doing? I said, not worth a crap. Millie says, well, I want to make a 12-step call on her. I said, well, has Debbie knows you're coming? And she says, no. But I'm going to make it anyway. So she went and got this other girl, and they went, and Millie carries a Bible with her and a big book. And she says, I want you to go with her so you can take the kid and get the, got a 4-year-old grandson, get him out of the house. And they went over, and we got there, and Debbie started F and MF and all that. And I said, let me grab him, I'll get out of here. And she was cussing Millie and this other lady, and I left. And I came back a couple hours later, and they all sitting there laughing. And I said, what's going on? They says, well, you're going to the conference down in Laughlin, right, at the Tri-State. I said, yeah. She said, well, she's going with you. I said, you going to the AA conference? She said, yes. I said, okay. And she went. I was there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I never went to one meeting. I babysitted that little guy for 3 days. Probably the best conference I ever been to. Love that guy, boy. Just love him to death, Joshua. And she was there Friday. She was drunk and high Saturday. And she got up Sunday morning, took everything she had and threw it in the river. And she got a sponsor, and it's not me. She's got 2 commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous. She goes to a meeting every day. And you never know, right? Millie calls her all the time, asks you how you're doing. And thank God for people in AA that step over the line and try to help people. Thank God for them people. You know what I mean? I kept the door open on the guy for a long time, and now he's got a year and a half. He went back out and stayed out for 6 or 7. And every now and then I'll just pick up the phone and call him. I said, just Brian, I'm just checking on you, making sure you're all right, and let you know I care. And when he didn't want to do it no more, he called me up and he said, are you still my sponsor? I said, absolutely. You know, and I just don't shut the door on him. I'm not one of these people that, well, if you don't do it my way, then, you know, are you kidding? I'm a dumb redneck. Can you imagine that, putting a corsage on a dumb redneck? Is that dumb or what? You know? But, you know, this pretty lady I'm telling you about went to divorce, divorced 5 years, and then I remarried. And my sponsor told me not to, and I did. And 3 days later, I knew I made a mistake. I stayed married 5 more years and went through divorce again. And my sponsor told me that we had a beautiful home paid for and everything. And he said, give her everything and get on with your life. I said, I'm entitled to something. He said, yes, you are, your life. He says, I'm not worried about you, but I'm worried about Inga. So give her everything, sign everything over to her, and get on with your life. And I wound up 50 years old back in a one-bedroom apartment. No money. A car that you could hear again 3 miles before you seen it. She got the nice new one. And so I decided to quit Alcoholics Anonymous. 10 years sober. Had all this fun I could take. And we'd get 2 jobs, make some money, and get my life going. So I figured I better go over and tell Ted, since he's helped me so much. So I walked in the house, and as soon as he see me, he said, now that you're divorced, you're going to have plenty of time. I want you to go back down to Skid Row and back down to this. I said, Ted, I'm broke, for Christ's sake. I said, you said give her everything. I'm back in one bedroom apartment. I ain't got two quarters. I said, you go back down there and them guys want cigarettes and cheeseburgers. He said, well, if you got $10, take $3 and feed one of them. I said, if I got 100, I'll take 3. If I got 10, I ain't giving them nothing. And he says, you don't trust God. I said, sure I do, Ted. He says, no, you have faith in God, but you don't trust him. I said, okay, here we go again. You know, I said, you going to explain this to me? So he tells me this story. I know it's not true. But he tells it anyway. They got a, if you ever been to Vegas, you know what I'm talking about. They got a casino called Circus Circus. And they have these circus acts. And he says they got an act there where a guy rolls a wheelbarrow across the cable. I don't believe that, but he's what he said. They roll this wheelbarrow back and forth across the cable. And if you watch the guy, you know, you have faith that he can roll that wheelbarrow across that cable. But if you trust him, you'll get in a wheelbarrow and let him push it. And that's the difference between trust and faith. And he says, you got to start trusting God. And I started getting promoted at work so fast, I almost lost my job, and everything just started to turn around for me. And just in the last 6 or 7 months, my life has turned around again. My daughter's moved back in with me. I was at a conference, and my heart went out on me, and I was a Saturday night speaker, and I wound up in the Salem emergency room, and I had 3 shock treatments. I had an ablation that went up, and they finally put a pacemaker in. And Thursday I went there, and they checked it out for me. I've had it for not quite a year yet. And the guy told me, I very seldom ever get to say this, but you got a perfect score. Your thing, this thing is working in you perfect. And through God's help and some people that, and I said, so I get good news. And I sold some land, and I was getting paid, and the people give the land back, so I lost that. I lost my income, and my daughter and my grandson moved back in, and so my bills have doubled. And so what I've done is I got back in the wheelbarrow. I'm going to let God push. I just don't believe he's brought me this far to drop me on my butt. It just don't look that nice out there right now, but I just told everybody to tighten their belt, and I've had to do it before, you know. But if I don't believe that God's going to take care of me, what am I sitting here doing all this kind of stuff? There is a loving God, and it's not Billy Smith. And so far, I can look back, and everything has ever happened in my life always worked out. Maybe not exactly the way I want, but it's worked out for the best, you know. I get to go back and see my brother and do them kind of things, you know. And this pretty lady after the divorce, I went over to, I drove by the house one day, and it just looked like crap, and I loved it. I thought, wow. Yes. She deserves that, yes. But I got a big mouth, and I went over and told my sponsor. Wrong thing to do. He says, how bad is it? I said, it's bad. He says, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go over and knock on the door, tell her you want to fix it up, mow the yard, take care of everything, and don't ask her for no money. I said, Ted, you're kidding. He says, no. He said, this resentment's killing you, and it's one of the few times he told me. He said, you keep resenting her, you're going to drink. So go over and do the right thing. And she died 2.5 years ago, and for 20-some years, I went over every week and mowed the yard, tell her this, did this, and fixed the pool, put it in a sprinkler system, and I never asked her for one dime. And I went over one time, and I found her. She was laying behind the, between the closet and the bed thing, and she couldn't get up, and I went and got all my stuff and told her I'm moving back in with you. And I lived with her until the day she died. And I was the only one in the room. I always told her, and she'd call me all kinds of names and say all kinds of bad things about me. And I said, I don't care what you say. You ain't running me off. I'm here to the end. And I was the only one in the room that when she took her last breath. And I didn't know God would make that available for me, but I kept my word. I was there to the end. And I pray for her soul every day, and I thank her every day for taking me to Alcoholics Anonymous. She was my shining light, and I don't want to forget it. You know, things don't happen by accident, you know. And I hear people say, well, I need to pay back. I said, then go do it. Yeah. Quit talking about it. Go pay back. If you owe somebody, you owe amends, go pay back, you know. And I meet now with the guys from Caesars that I work with. We meet every 2 months, and We have the Sahara Union. We have that every year. We just had it in September, and there was 9 guys that was there the year before that's not there this time. And so we go there, and we're all getting old, you know, and we show up, you know. And I never realized, you know, and I'm telling you how bad of an employee I was. And I retired in 2000 at Caesars when Harris bought it. And I went, and I was 64 years old, and I always said if it, the job quits being fun, I'm going to quit. And it got where it was a problem for me getting my suit on. I didn't want to do it no more. So I went and told them I was going to retire, and I'd give them whatever notice they get to replace me to find another boss to take my spot. And they had me upstairs for like over an hour trying to get me to stay. And he kept saying, I said, well, I told Mike, I said, Mike, listen, I don't want to prove myself again because the new regime came in. And he said, but you don't have to. We know all about you and we want you to stay. And I said, I'm just tired. I don't want to do it. And he said, Billy, we need you down there right now until we get these other guys broke in with these customers. You know, all these customers, we need you to stay there. I said, well, I'll give you 2 or 3 weeks and then I'm gone. And finally he looked at me and said, we can't talk you out of this, can we? I said, no. And he said something that blew me away. He says, okay, here's the deal. If you don't like retirement, give us 1 day notice and we'll put you back to work. And I thought, wow, here's a guy been fired from everywhere, everything in your life, and all of a sudden, and I walked out of there knowing that I was a good employee. And what a difference. See, everything that's happened is a direct result of our cost. Let me tell you about this grandson of mine real quick. I got this little guy in a... I do the 3rd-step prayer and the 7th-step prayer and 11th-step prayer every morning. And then I got this long prayer list that I do. And then I got all these names on 4 pieces of paper that I pray for. And so if you got somebody in trouble, put it on paper and I put it on my prayer list. So I'm a believer in prayer. Bill White told me one time that prayer doesn't change the nature. He changed the nature of God. Prayer changed the nature of he who prays. And I had a hard time getting on my knees, and I wouldn't miss my prayers for nothing in the world. And so I'm doing my prayers one morning, and my little buddy, 4.5-year-old, gets his book and gets right beside of me. And he's like, give me, going. He's reading something. I don't know what he's reading. But he's reading pretty good, you know. And when I get all done, I go through my prayers, and I thank him. I pray for my mom and dad's soul and a lot of other people's soul, and I pray for my friends that's in trouble. And you know, and I pray for the guys at detox and all that. And then when I got all done, I said, and thank you, God, for Joshua. And my little buddy says, thank you, God, for Papa. Right? Alcoholics Anonymous. Every good and decent thing that's ever happened to me is a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me tell you this stupid story. It's funny. And it's true. Had this old yellow lab named Buddy. He's an alcoholic dog. He was born with no tail. I mean, really weird looking thing. And Debbie come dragging him home. He's like 5 weeks old. The mother dried up and he looked like a dead rat. And, we got a bottle and fed him and, turned out to be the greatest animal I ever had. He was field trained and, he was just awesome and he was tuned into Billy. And when she went on, she was living with me and she was doing all that stuff and I kicked her out and she grabbed the dog and I said, the dog can stay. You have to go. And don't even try to take him. He don't have to live in the streets. You do. And, she left because I wouldn't let her take him. And, when he got about 12 years old, I took him to the vet and found out he had a bad heart. And then we had this place behind Sunset Park. We'd go out these, rabbits and foxes and all that crap back there. He acts like a hunting dog. And, I had him out there this day and the wind was blowing hard and he got away from me. And I got on this mound and I looked out across this desert and there's no yellow dog nowhere. And I panicked and I started crying. I said, and what I thought he's had a heart attack. And all I said, God, please help me find this stupid animal so I can take him home and give him a decent burial. I don't want to leave him out here for the coyotes and stuff to get. Please help me find this stupid dog. It wasn't even a minute. Here come a guy riding a bicycle down a path in the middle of the desert. I started yelling at the guy and finally the guy stopped and I said, listen, I don't want nothing, but I got a yellow lab out here in the desert someplace. Have you seen one? He says, no, but there's one in the parking lot sitting by a white truck that don't have a tail. I said, holy mackerel, that's him. So I went back and he'd done what he'd always taught to do. He just doubled back and went back and he's sitting by the truck, you know. And so I went and told Craig Clove, I said, can you believe that? I asked God for help. bicycle back at the truck. Craig says, you got the God thing mixed up. I said, Craig, I'm not making nothing up. God help me. Bicycle back at the truck. He says, you got the God thing mixed up. I said, what do you think happened? He says, here's really what happened. Buddy's back at the truck going, listen, God, I got this dumb redneck out in the desert. Will you please send somebody on a bicycle to get him and bring him back here? I said, okay. Maybe it was God. Maybe it was Buddy's God. Maybe it was, you know. I always end my pitch the same way. This is a story that my father told me when I was real little. And I hate speakers that go over, so I'm not going to do it. And story my father told me when I was a kid. I don't know if he told the rest of the kids or not, but it's about a horse race in this small town in North Carolina, and whoever wins the race is like the king for the year. And there's like 13 to 15 kids in this race. And all the kid fathers are in the winning circle, except there's one father back in the barn with the man in the barn. And the man in the barn says, why aren't you in the winning circle with all the rest of the fathers? And the father looked at the man in the barn, and he says, listen, if my son wins this race, he won't need me. But if he loses, I want to be here for him. And I am so glad you were here for me. So if you're new, come and join us. Put these principles in your life and watch your family stand in a winning circle. Thank you very, very much.